This is my house too. Fiona swung the door open, but stood blocking the entrance.
We're beyond that now, Jay. You come out with so much bollocks, I find it hard to even look at you.
She was angrier than before.
You're better off staying with your mum.
Fiona, I moved out to give you some space. I did what you asked, and you've changed the locks. Do you not see what a massive overreaction that is?
I'm just trying to be sensible. Everything I thought we were building just wasn't good enough, was it? I really tried. But you're obviously not going to change. You're not going to tell me the truth. You're not going to magically reappear as the old Jacob. We need to be realistic.
She wiped her eyes on her cardigan cuff. So what is it now, then? You don't know me, and I keep my thoughts to myself, and that's the problem? Jacob said, grinding his jaw. Or you think I'm cheating on you and throwing away everything we have because I dared to go for a drive at night when I couldn't sleep because of your snoring? Which is it?
The two aren't mutually exclusive, Jacob. It's both of those things and more. And thank you for twisting this so it's somehow my fault for snoring when I'm heavily pregnant. Jesus!
Fiona, you're wrong about so much of this, and you're choosing to see the worst in me. After all this time, don't I deserve some benefit of the doubt?
She said nothing, hands on hips, her eyes searching his face.
Jacob's voice got louder. I've never hurt you, never cheated on you, never laid a finger on you. I know I'm not always easy to live with, but neither are you. How about a little mutual understanding?
How can I understand you when you're never honest with me? I don't know what I'm supposed to understand. Who are you, Jacob? What's going on in that fucking head of yours? You sneak off, you lie to me, you can't look me in the bloody eye. If you're not cheating, I dread to think what you are doing.
You want me to be totally honest with you, Fiona?
He laughed and looked at the neighbouring house, whose curtains suddenly snapped back into place.
You want me to be totally honest so you can twist everything and use what I say to beat me around the head? Some things are too precious for that.
He spat.
You don't know me at all. You said it yourself. I thought you knew me better than anyone, but that was just wishful thinking. Fuck it, I don't even think you like me.
He pressed his hands against the wall as she glared at him, her silence more deafening than her yell.
Fiona, I love you, but right now I don't like you very much either. You're like a coiled snake all the time. I can't ever relax. I'm walking on eggshells and I can't do it forever.
You made me this way, came the strangled reply.
I probably did, yeah,
he said with a softer voice. I hate you for that. I don't want to be this person.
We are who we are. If we can't get past this, then maybe we should call it quits.
He hadn't meant to say it. He hadn't even thought it until it fell out of his mouth. And when Fiona said nothing, he swung away on his crutches before he could say anything else.
Chapter 39. Alex. 4th of October, 2010. Alex gave her eyes an almost cartoon rub as she barreled down the M5, blinking into the morning light. The night before had been restless, and the small servings of wine had slipped down too quickly. After her preliminary water, she'd drunk her first two glasses in quick succession. She had stood and stared into the sink, almost in disbelief, as if that's where the wine had disappeared. It had taken every shred of her will to step away, sit on the sofa, and slow things down. After a fitful few hours' sleep, it wasn't a good morning to be driving, but at least she was out of the kitchen and taking charge. The first and last time she'd visited Devon was in secondary school, a school trip aged 12, riding ponies on Dartmoor and learning to do brass rubbings. She'd taken a bottle of cheap, watery vodka from the back of the cabinet, the emergency stash, and she and two friends had got so drunk on cartons of orange juice and slugs of vodka that the other girls had ended up half naked. They weren't used to alcohol. One girl, Anne, had to be sent home. Since hanging up on her, Bob hadn't answered any of her calls, so she decided to drive down at first light. To distract herself from how much she wanted to sink another big glass, Alex had spent the previous evening cross-legged on the floor, rifling through her CDs. With the nurse's singing in mind, she decided to put together a playlist for Amy. She didn't know where to start, and eventually just spread them all around her like sweets. She'd forgotten she had so many albums until she pulled them off the shelves and scattered them. Thousands and thousands of songs. Albums covered in dust, edges frayed, abandoned. Music had been everything when she bought some of these. What else do you have to care about at 15? Blur had been Amy's favourite band, Jacob said, so eventually she started there. And now, iPhone dangling from the MP3 slot of her car stereo, Alex's heart pounded with the familiarity and sadness of so many long-forgotten favourites. By the time she reached Ufcombe, Bob's village, Alex was desperate for the toilet and a shot of caffeine. To stop and wander around was too risky. The 4-hour journey would be a total waste if Bob spotted her and got spooked. She turned the music off and followed the sat-nav past the church, down a lane just wide enough for one vehicle. She bumped over a cattle grate, bladder close to bursting with every jolt. Bob's van was outside, his new name stenciled in dark blue on the side. The little cottage was more cardboard box than chocolate box. Meeting the road side on, it was hemmed in on all sides by thick wedges of fields divided by jagged blackberry bushes. The cement-covered walls had turned green at the bottom, and only one small window faced the road. The low metal gate swung open towards her.
"You promised you wouldn't do this."
"You lied to me, Bob," Alex said, climbing out of the car and standing carefully on the uneven ground. "You said you'd never met Amy's birth dad."
"What the hell are you doing here?"
Bob looked around frantically. "I didn't want to do this. I really didn't want to drive 4 hours to surprise you, but this is serious." Alex leaned against her car and Bob sagged. "Bob, you didn't just meet Amy's dad. You attacked him."
"You've got it all wrong."
"No, I haven't."
"You've got it half right, okay? He came looking, all right?"
Bob puffed like he was reaching the end of an uphill run.
"He came looking. Just, look, come in. Judy's out on the school run. She's not going to be long, so you need to promise me you'll go afterwards."
"After you tell me the truth?"
"Yeah."
"Okay, I promise. Again." They walked in silence through broken pots and bright plastic trikes in the garden. Bob shoved the sticking porch door and took his shoes off carefully. Alex followed suit. Inside, Bob flicked on the kettle in a kitchen with patterned floral curtains instead of cupboard doors.
"Judy did this all herself," Bob said.
The downstairs bathroom Alex had almost pleaded to use had little net curtains hanging in front of the frosted, scalloped window. A couple of lazy spiders rolled in the furthest corner of the ceiling, and the small hand towel was slightly cold and damp. It was deathly quiet outside of the door, and had Alex been any less bursting, she would have felt self-conscious at her own noise. After picking her way through a corridor of toys leading back from the bathroom, Alex sank into the tired, velveteen sofa. She splashed a little of her tea and apologized profusely. The detritus of family life was dotted on shelves and in corners. Stacks of wicker baskets with toy limbs poking out, children's shoes lined up by the door.
"How old are they?"
"I don't want to. They're young. Primary school. Judy's. I've been lucky."
"Tell me what happened, Bob, when Amy's dad came looking for her."
Bob took a rattly breath and cleared his throat.
"Amy was only small. I'd not long moved into Joe's and he turned up."
When was this? During the day? Middle of the night?
It was evening time. Joe had just given Amy her bath, and they were in our room with the hairdryer.
So, what happened? Did you let him in?
He didn't knock. He was banging on the door with both hands, yelling, threatening, saying he'd get custody, that he'd come back and take her in the night, all sorts. Joe was terrified.
Was he alone?
No, he had his mum with him, and she was a vicious old bat.
So he didn't try to talk sensibly to you? You didn't try to talk to him?
He was pissed as a fart. There was no talking to him. Joe was shaking like a leaf, sobbing. Amy was scared stiff. She was only little. I sent him away. I was protecting my family.
And he never came back?
We moved.
He never found you again? You didn't exactly move far, one bit of town to the other.
No.
I know that's not true. He called Amy at your house when she was a teenager.
How'd you know about that?
Bob sat up and put his tea down fast. She told her boyfriend.
Shit,
Bob said under his breath.
Yeah, all right, he got the number. God knows how. He called and tried to confuse her. She didn't really want to meet him.
Are you sure about that?
Definitely. She could have told us if she wanted to see him.
And you don't think she just went ahead and met him anyway?
She didn't meet him. She wouldn't have kept that a secret. She was a good girl.
And the police knew he'd been in touch? Bob shook his head. Why not, Bob? Don't you think he might have been involved?
No.
How can you be so sure? Joe told you he was a thug. Surely you wanted to tell the police that Amy's violent birth father had tracked her down. Surely Joe wanted to tell them that. A history of violence?
Oh, blimey, look, he wasn't exactly violent. Not to her. That wasn't true. I told you that stuff so you wouldn't start down this line. I didn't want you writing about that, connecting me and him again. He was just a waster. He was a mouthache, a petty criminal. He smoked grass, he nicked things. He treated Joe like muck on his shoe, had her shoplifting things, giving him her wages. He'd have done the same to Amy. Dragged her in, pulled her down. She was going to be better than that. Better than us. And definitely better than him.
What's his name, Bob?
Do I have a choice?
What time's Judy coming back?
All right.
Bob sighed.
Paul Wheeler.
Do you know anything else about him?
I've told you everything. Please, Alex, I just want to protect what I have now.
I don't want to cause problems for you, and I'm sorry it came to this. Just please let me know if you think of anything else.
St. Mary Cray,
Bob said with a sigh, and rose quickly to show her out. St. Mary Cray near Orpington?
That's where he lives. Arsehole of a place. St. Mary Cray. I doubt he's had enough about him to move.
Thank you, Bob.
Just please, love. Don't get sucked in by him.
And Alex? Yes?
Please don't come back.
The last hour of the drive was a blur of dry throat, inane radio chatter, and slamming her brakes on through traffic cameras. Finally home, Alex threw the front door open and ran into the kitchen, holding the sideboard to steady her. She had to stay level-headed. The plan had to hold. 2 days of gulping in a row would have been risky. She poured her first serving of Rioja into the jug and back out into her smallest glass. She bit the inside of her lip to slow herself down as she poured a tall glass of bottled water. She sank the water fast, out of sheer physical need. She sipped the wine, then lapped at the dregs with her tongue, until even the sheen on the inside of the glass had been replaced with tiny drops of saliva. Placing the empty glasses carefully on the sideboard, she opened her laptop's browser. Paul Wheeler of St. Mary Cray, Amy's birth dad. Fucking hell. Within seconds, a bunch of Google results belched up on the laptop screen. By the looks of things, Paul Wheeler was still in St. Mary Cray. Bob was right. Paul Wheeler of St. Mary Cray, giving his opinion on a local election in an old newspaper article.
They're all on the take.
Paul Wheeler, a 42, Eden Court, St. Mary Cray, representing himself in the Crown Court on charges of benefit fraud. Suspended sentence. Her phone blinked with a text from Jacob.
How did it go?
Hi, it went well. Think I'm getting somewhere. Do you fancy a road trip tomorrow?
Depends. Where are you going?
Paddock Grove, leading to Eden Court, looked much the same as the rest of St. Mary Cray in the rain. Tight little red bricks burrowed into dirty walls. White plastic balconies sagged under flat roofs. The twin hums of the M25 and A20 underpinned the town's soundtrack. Cars rushing past the place in great voice. Just a few souls dotted the pavements. An overweight woman spilled from the sides of a motorized scooter. A crumpled man zigzagged towards the road, waving a short stub of rolled-up cigarette at no one in particular. Thanks for coming with me. I really appreciate it, Alex told Jacob, flicking her eyes briefly from the road to try to make eye contact. You're the only person that knows about Amy's dad. Besides Bob, I mean.
I still don't think he's connected, but it didn't feel right you going on your own. Besides, I'm at a loose end right now.
Turn left into Eden Court, the sat-nav barked. They parked a few doors down and sat in silence. Come on, let's get this done and then I'll drop you straight back to your mum's. There was absolutely nothing to mark number 42 out from the rest of Eden Court. As tired as the rest, it nudged up to number 40, with a dark alleyway tunnelled out between the two. A beware of the dog sign hung impotently on an open gate, and the neighbouring garden had a moped propped up in it, casting a diagonal shadow across the patchy brown grass. Nothing moved. No sound came when they rang the bell. Alex rapped on the dull blue door with a prim fist. As the sound of the television stopped abruptly, she shot a look at Jacob, who was leaning on his crutches. He didn't smile. The door swung open. A tall man of about 50 had a toddler perched on one hip as he held a boxer dog back with his leg. His sharp emerald eyes narrowed in the thin light.
Yeah?
Are you Paul Wheeler? Alex asked.
Why?
Came a low, rumbling voice.
We've come to talk to Paul Wheeler about his daughter, Amy. I'm pretty sure that's you, because you look just like her.
Jacob interrupted.
Fuck's sake! And who are you two?
I'm Alex, and this is Jacob. I'm writing a story about Amy, and Jacob is...
An old friend of your daughter's. Offer him a cup of tea, then,
Paul said to a boy of about 8, as he kicked the boy's socked feet off the footstool and gestured for him to put his Nintendo gadget down. The boy flopped off the sofa, sighed, and asked the side of Alex's head if she wanted a tea. Oh, I'm fine, thanks. What's your name? The boy looked at Paul.
It's all right. You can tell her.
It's Matty.
My husband was called Matt.
Okay,
said the boy. Alex blushed.
Do you want a tea?
He asked Jacob.
I'm good, thanks,
said Jacob. The boy flopped back down.
What about old Dad?
Want a tea, Dad? The boy asked.
Yeah, make it a good strong one. Don't rush it.
Paul narrowed his eyes as the boy slumped out of the living room door.
You two are a bit dense, aren't you?
Sorry? Alex and Jacob said in unison.
I was trying to get rid of him. I don't want him hearing this. He doesn't even know he had a sister, other than this one.
He gestured to the toddler sucking on a dummy in the corner of the battered sofa. Oh, sorry, I didn't think, Alex said, feeling flustered. Paul Wheeler seemed entirely calm.
It's all right. What do you want, then? Want me to sell my story?
Well, do you have a story? Alex asked.
You tell me,
The small living room was neat and tidy. One bar on the gas fire flickered blue, and the boxer dog lay contentedly on his belly in front of it, absorbing all the heat.
Let's start again. I'm Alex Dale, and I'm a journalist. I write about health issues, and I'm writing about your daughter's condition. Jacob was close to Amy in school, and he's been helping me build up some background to her story.
I know who he is.
Jacob sat up a little on the grey sofa.
You do?
I know all about you, Jake.
I don't understand.
Now, don't suppose you do?
The dark curls of the small girl next to Paul started to tremble a little as she slipped into a snoring sleep. Brief bursts of unconscious suckling came from her mouth until, with a final half-hearted suck, the plastic dummy fell from her lips into the crook of the sofa. A spit trail followed it.
She told me all about you,
Paul continued, holding Jacob's gaze without blinking.
Amy did,
frowned Jacob.
She told me about how you was her boyfriend. She told me about her little friends. She told me about the grammar school, what teachers she hated. All of it.
I thought you only spoke once.
Did you now?
The boy sloped back in and put his father's mug on the arm of the sofa.
Good boy, Matty. Go to your room for a bit.
All this happened in one conversation? Alex asked, as the boy shut the door behind him. Nodding at Alex's hands, Paul's eyes narrowed again.
Notes, is it?
I'd really like to interview you on the record, Mr. Wheeler. Would that be okay? I don't have to name you in the published article, but I'm sure it would be helpful to get your side across.
Oh, you can name me. You can say whatever you like, so long as you pay me.
I don't think you understand. I've not been paid yet. I'm a freelancer, and I'm writing this off my own back. The Times are interested in running it when it's finished, but it's not guaranteed.
Then I don't think there's anything else for us to talk about.
Oh, well, I'm sorry you feel that way. You're the first person to ask me for money. I mean, maybe if I place the story, I could...
Bob's helping,
Jacob said, fixing his eyes onto Paul's emerald eyes.
Is he now?
Yep, he's already helped a lot. He told Alex his side of the story, told her all about Amy, told Alex what it was like raising her.
Has he now?
Yes, Alex joined in. He's given me some really valuable insights into Amy's life. You know, he was accused for a while. Police took him in because they mistook how close he and Amy were. She was a real daddy's girl by all accounts.
Not by my account.
How so?
He controlled her.
Alex flipped her notepad back open, praying the iPhone hadn't stopped recording in her pocket. Go on.
He wouldn't let her out of his sight. Wouldn't let her meet my family. Her family. It killed my mum. Granddaughter she only met once. Killed her cold.
Your mum met Amy? When?
That's how I found her the first time. I'm not going to lie. When Joe told me she was pregnant, I weren't happy. I was 18. I was a kid. No proper job, doing this and that.
What do you do now? Alex asked.
I'm a single father now.
Paul snapped.
Me and Joe weren't really together. On and off, you know. She could be a stuck-up little cow. She looked down on me and mine. Not that she came from better. Anyway, we were back on this one time, and she tells me she's in the club, and it's mine. I didn't know if she was telling the truth or not. Birds are sneaky.
So what happened after she told you she was pregnant? Alex asked.
I said she should get rid of it. It weren't the right time. She told me where to go, and I didn't see her again. Just like that.
That seems very extreme.
It wasn't a polite conversation like what we're having.
Did you threaten her? Jacob asked.
No, I didn't threaten her. What's your problem?
So she just upped and left? Alex asked.
She was a kid herself. Wasn't tight to her family. I don't even know where they lived. She could be a bit... what's the word?
Impulsive?
Shirty.
So when did your mum meet Amy?
She was in Sevenoaks one day with my auntie, a few years after I last saw Joe. Mum said she was in Tesco and clocked Joe, recognised her straight away. And Joe had a little girl with her, a little blue-eyed, dark-haired girl, the spit of me and my brothers and sisters.
Amy?
Yeah, Amy. Of course I didn't know that was her name. Didn't know anything about her then. Mum went over to see Joe and asked her straight out if the girl was mine. She looked that similar.
Your mum didn't know?
I didn't tell her Joe was expecting. I still lived at home when Joe fell. I'd have got to hide him for getting a girl in trouble. Joe left anyway. There was nothing to tell.
So what did Joe say to your mum?
Told her Amy was mine. Told her she was living with a new fella. Told her I'd known all along. Bloody told her I wasn't interested. Really threw me under the bus. Told Mum she lived in Edenbridge and that Mum could see her any time she wanted. Even wrote down her address.
What happened then?
Mum came round my bedsit and gave me a clip round the ear. Told me I had a kid. Told me she was being brought up by some other bloke and it wasn't right. We got in the car and she drove us straight round to Joe's.
You and your mum went?
Yeah.
And what happened when you got there?
I knocked on the door. Respectful like.
Paul shot Jacob a look.
Waited. Nothing. Knocked again. Saw the curtains twitch. You know what I mean? Nothing. Cunt comes out, shouting the odds.
Paul was getting more and more animated as the toddler next to him slept on obliviously.
He's calling Mum all sorts. He shoves me, tells my mum to get back in her car and never come back. He's swinging at me and threatening her.
Bob was?
Yeah, Saint Bloody Bob.
I've met Bob a couple of times now, said Alex cautiously. He's not a very big guy.
I'm not being funny, but I just wanted to get my mum out of it. Yeah, I could have knocked him out cold, but her health was bad and she was upset. I didn't want a row. I didn't even want to see the kid then. Harsh but true. I didn't know her. Didn't have no money. Didn't want the headache. I was only there for Mum's sake.
So you just left?
Yeah, we left. Got in Mum's car and she drove us back.
And your mum didn't see Amy again?
My mum died a couple of weeks later.
I'm sorry.
It's all right. It weren't your fault. It was his.
What did your mum die from?
Broken heart.
Okay, interrupted Jacob, but what did the doctors say she died from?
Heart attack. But she'd still be here today if it wasn't for him.
So you were angry with Bob?
Of course I was angry with Bob. Cunt had my kid and killed my mum.
That seems like a bit of a leap. You said your mum was ill already, Alex said.
She'd still be here today if it wasn't for him. So would Amy.
What do you mean? Asked Jacob.
He kept her on a tight lead. Too tight. She rebelled and went off with someone. Look what happened.
Who did she go off with? Alex asked. Do you know what happened to Amy?
I don't need to know what happened to know what happened.
You said you knew all about me, Jacob said. How often did you talk to Amy?
You know, they upped and moved after Mum died,
Paul said to Alex, ignoring Jacob.
I sent a letter to Joe, told her what happened, asked her to bring Amy to the funeral. Never got a reply. Time I went back round there, they'd moved.
When was that?
Couple of years later.
Years?
Yeah, years. I was grieving for my mum, wasn't I?
So when did you get back in touch with Amy?
When she was in her teens. I saw her in the paper.
What paper?
She was in the local news for some writing competition. My auntie saw the article, sent it to me.
I remember that, Jacob said, more to Alex than Paul. She was embarrassed about her picture being in the paper.
Yeah, well, my auntie Jean saw it. Amy was called Stevenson by then, but my auntie could see exactly who she was. She looked the spit. Paper said she went to the grammar school in Edenbridge. That's not my genes, to be fair. She was lucky from her mum there.
How did you get in touch with her?
Phone the school.
The school?
Yeah, the school. Well, my sister did. Put on a posh voice, told the bird on the other end that she was calling from a private school. Made out there was this writing scholarship for bright kids, and they wanted Amy to apply on account of her winning this story competition. Woman gave out the number. Done.
My school gave out a pupil's home number. Just like that.
Yeah, just like that.
I'm sorry, but that seems really unlikely, Jacob said. My mum worked in the school office back then, and she would never give out information like that. She was way too fastidious.
Whatever. Someone gave my sister the number.
And you called the number? Alex asked.
Yeah. Called after school that day. First time, he answered. I just put it down. Next time I tried, Amy answered. I knew it was her, straight away. She sounded like her mum, but posh.
Amy isn't posh, Jacob laughed.
Maybe not to you. I told her who I was. Said I was her dad. Said I'd tried to track her down and that I wanted to get to know her.
What did she say?
She didn't say a lot. She was shocked, I think. She told me you'd asked to meet her, Jacob said. She told Joe and Bob, too. I wanted to meet her, but I said I'd phone her a few more times first so we could get to know each other. I didn't want it to be tricky when we met. She didn't tell me that, Jacob said, frowning. No, don't seem she did. She told me what times to call so she'd be on her own. I don't think I'd be happy with my daughter telling people when she'd be home alone, Jacob said. Got kids, have you?
One on the way, Jacob said carefully.
Well, let me tell you, she wasn't telling people. She was telling her dad, her real dad. And she knew I was her real dad because I knew so much about her mum. I told her about when we got together and that I knew about Bob and I told her everything. I told her about when I came looking for her before and she told me she remembered.
So did you call back again? Alex asked, pen hovering.
Most days. At first I did all the talking and then she started to tell me more. She told me about school. About a little boyfriend over there.
Paul smirked at Jacob.
All about her friends.
But you never met?
No. After a couple of weeks of us talking, she told Bob and Joe.
A couple of weeks? Alex's eyebrows rose.
Yeah, a couple of weeks. She told Joe and him that I'd called. Told them I'd been nice and reasonable, which I was. Told them she wanted a chance to get to know me. They told her no. Told her I was this and that. None of it true. Confused her for a while so she wouldn't even talk to me. But she came round. We started talking again. After a couple of months, she agreed to meet me.
So you're saying you did meet her?
Nope. We hadn't made a formal arrangement, but I wanted to check she was all right. I wanted to see her in her own world, you know? So I went to meet her from school one day. But she was with some fella.
What fella? Alex asked, sitting up straighter.
How am I supposed to know? Some bloke. Older fella. Teacher, maybe.
When was this?
A week or so before she was on the telly.
What did this bloke look like? Asked Jacob, his voice wavering.
Fuck should I know? It was 15 bloody years ago. It was a bloke. I think he was white and taller than her. I didn't get a good look, but he weren't a school kid. And he weren't you.
Paul nodded slightly at Jacob. And did Amy speak to you? Alex asked, staring directly at Paul.
No,
Paul said, avoiding her eye.
She didn't see me. I left her to it.
Did you tell the police?
What do you think I am? A mug?
But you had information about your daughter. You'd seen her with someone. And all those phone calls... She might have told you something that could help.
She didn't tell me nothing that would help them. And I wasn't sticking my neck on the line. It don't take a genius to see how that would go.
You don't seem very upset, Jacob said, flatly.
Who the fuck do you think you are?
The living room door opened, and Matty's mop of hair poked around.
Can I watch telly?
Back to your room, Paul yelled. You're supposed to be all sick anyway.
Socked feet thundered up the squeaky stairs.
Tell me I'm not fucking upset, mate. I'm not having that. You don't know nothing about me.
I find it odd that you never came forward with any of this. She was on the TV for weeks, and you're describing your daughter going missing like, I don't know, like a dog that ran away.
Jacob's bravado was unsettling Alex.
You wait until you have your kid, said Paul,
raising his voice to pub row levels.
You just wait. You can't imagine what it's like yet. Some cunt out there picks up your little girl and kills her. You have to decide, do I pick myself up, dust myself down and block it out? Or do I die with her? That's your only choice.
I'm sorry, said Alex. I understand how upsetting this must be for you, but Amy didn't die. She's still alive.
No, she ain't. Her body's hooked up to some machine, but she's dead.
She's not being kept alive by machines anymore. She's breathing by herself, and the doctors have registered brain activity, Alex argued quietly. Jacob frowned at her.
Amy's dead, Paul said.
So your other children don't know about Amy then? Alex asked.
There's never been a reason to tell them. Look at Chloe sleeping. She don't need to know how shit the world is. Let her sleep. Let me worry about the world.
Where's their mum? Jacob asked, stretching his fingers out in his lap.
Mums. Two of them. Matty was a one-off thing with a girl I knew. She was in no fit state to bring him up. Slag. Chloe was with my ex. She sees her weekends.
That's quite unique, Alex said.
I wasn't letting these ones go. I told both their mums, you have this kid. This is my kid. You leave me, you leave the kid here. I walked away once. Never again.
Paul wiped his eyes on his sleeve.
Now, how much can I get for a photo?
Chapter 40. Amy. Sometime in 2004. When my mum thinks someone is a bit dodgy, she describes them as a case. It's the kind of mum language that doesn't arouse suspicion, that doesn't sound like she's slagging them off or casting aspersions, as she also says. But if you know her, you know exactly what she means. Bob's dad, Granddad Pete, who died a few years ago, he was a case. And by case, she meant he was a mean old racist and woman-hater. The bloke in the greengrocer who always makes double entendres about fruit, he's a case. Behind Mum's eye-rolling smile, you can see her opinion of him curdle more and more with every shopping trip. Eventually, she'll just go to the co-op instead. And old Jack in our road? He's another one. My mum has told me in no uncertain terms to give him a wide berth. She didn't trust him as it was. You could see her invisible antennae go off the moment she first met him. Even I noticed that, and I was really young at the time. But when I told her I'd seen him being a case in the window when I walked past, she grabbed me by the wrist and told me that I was to walk away if ever I saw him coming my way and to cross the road whenever he was out and about. I didn't tell Bob. I just knew, without Mum saying, that it was better not to. What words would I even use? Fiddling with himself? Or maybe I should be all biology class about it and say that I suspected he was masturbating as he watched me. Oh, cringe. No, it was better just to avoid him and leave Bob undisturbed. The last thing any of us needed was Bob steaming round to a neighbour's house kicking off. Not that Bob's a thug, not at all. He's just quiet and cheerful most of the time. But when it comes to me and Mum, he's very protective. And that's nice, more or less. I mean, it does my head in when he over-worries and that means I can't do something I wanted to do. Especially if Mum said I can go out and then Bob's overruled it. But even when I'm at my most pissed off about it, I do get it. Some people don't have a dad who cares that much. And I'm grateful that I do. Not that I'd ever tell him that. I guess it's like having a bodyguard. A short, fat bodyguard in dungarees. It makes you feel safe. And if you feel safe, you feel brave. Maybe that's why I've always felt brave. Right now, though, I feel a little less brave than I used to. I think it's because I can't remember my last conversation with Bob. I can't feel his invisible hand on my shoulder. Has he had extra work on, maybe? I feel a bit foggy-headed today, but it feels like it's been a while. In fact, everything feels like it's been a while. I don't know if that makes sense, but I really can't place when I last did anything. Even stupid stuff like go to the toilet. When did I last go to the toilet? What did we have for tea yesterday or the day before? Maybe I've been sleeping too much and that's got me all cloudy. Mum always says it's just as bad to sleep too long as too little. Your body clock gets scrambled and you don't know where you are. I'm not a big sleeper. Not like Jake. That boy can sleep. I called him at 4 p.m. during half term once and his brother said he was still in bed. At 4 p.m. Now that's a sleepyhead. I guess it's easier when you live in quite a big house. In our house, if one of us is up and using the loo, we're all awake and queuing outside the bathroom. The kettle downstairs whistles me awake in the morning. I like our little house, though. I like knowing Mum and Bob are right there, and it's cosy. But I haven't been waking up when they've got ready for work. I seem to be asleep more than I'm awake right now. Maybe this is just something that happens at this age. That's the joke, isn't it? About students and teenagers and that, sleeping all day. Maybe my time has come. Maybe this is just a part of growing up.
Chapter 41. Jacob. 6th of October, 2010. The surgery had no record of an appointment for Fiona Arlington today.
The midwife is in again next Monday. Perhaps she has an appointment then,
the baggy-faced receptionist had told Jacob brusquely. Fiona's my wife, so I need to be there. Can you please tell me when I should come back? Jacob's hands gripped the reception desk where he had often signed Fiona in as she'd flopped down exhausted in the waiting area.
I'm sorry, sir, I can't. You'll need to ask your wife for that information.
Jacob pushed away hard from the desk, partly for momentum, mostly not. Outside, he furiously jabbed at his phone. Fiona picked up after 3 rings.
What is it, Jacob?
I've come for our appointment, but you're not here, he said.
It's my appointment, she said.
Don't punish the baby. Silence. We're still the baby's parents, regardless of what's happening with us.
You should have thought about that before you cheated on us.
Did you listen to nothing I said the other day? Sweet Jesus, Fiona, I'm not cheating on you. I've got stuff I need to sort out, and I don't even care if you believe me right now, but I'm not cheating on our baby, and you can't shut me out like this.
He heard Fiona take a deep breath.
Fine. You can come to the next appointment if you answer me one question.
Blackmail now?
Jacob trailed off and sought a shot of patience from the sky.
Fine. What's the question?
Is there another woman?
Not in the way you mean.
Click. The phone went straight to voicemail as soon as he tried to call back. As patients shoved in and out of the surgery doors, Jacob kept calling until he had barely any battery left and no idea what to say if she did answer.
Chapter 42. Alex. 6th of October, 2010. Hi, Amy. It's Alex again. Amy's breathing made its gentle sound, like the sea retreating. Her skin was almost luminous in the sunlight, and her face looked softer than during the last visit. It was easy to imagine Amy as a little girl, sitting in the garden pouring water between cups, or catching ladybirds on the ends of her fingers, and pedaling in decreasing circles on a tiny bike. Bob and Joe would have watched her grow from a little thing to a young woman Could they feel misplaced relief that she was no longer small and vulnerable? Of course, Alex realized, she was just reimagining her own childhood. When she'd sorted through her mother's things, she'd found a small leather photo album at the bottom of a box. Inside, pictures of Alex on a trike. Alex with a four-leaf clover. Alex sitting in a washing-up bowl playing with a bucket. And one of her father in his 60s. Two-year-old Alex folded into the crook of his elbow, both smiling rigidly. She couldn't remember meeting him then. Didn't remember any visits, clearly, except the last one. She was 11 and about to start secondary school. He had shown up, flustered and irascible, with a My Little Pony sticker book that Alex at once hated for its babyishness and loved because it was all there was. "I didn't think I missed having a dad, you know," Alex told Amy. "I didn't know what it was like to have a real dad anyway. I mean, a dad who doesn't have to keep you secret from his wife. But the older I got, the more I felt cheated, like I'd missed out on something fundamental. I bet it would have been different if I'd had a stepdad like Bob," Alex said carefully, watching Amy for tiny reactions. Alex's father was a high court judge, a highly regarded one. He died just after her 12th birthday, by which time he was nearly 80. Her mother was left a sum of money, and that's how his wife found out about Alex. It was all there in the will. "My mum had held out for years, Amy. I think she'd hoped having me would get her a pay bump. Obviously, she saw other men on and off. Lots of them, actually," Alex snorted. "But she was always holding out for that golden ticket." Alex closed her eyes. She had absorbed all the talk of the judge and ignored as much of it as possible. She hadn't asked about her siblings after the first time. Her mother had not reacted with kindness to Alex's lonely questions. For a while after he died, they would drive to the cemetery at night, and her mother would rage about the family plot and the discrepancies on the stone. Her mother would pour red wine from a thermos, and what sometimes started as a toast would fast descend into yelling at the gravestone. After a few months, her mother fell in with a new boyfriend, and the mourning abruptly ended. Alex sat back in the hospital chair and looked around Amy's curtained room. It must have been bigger than her bedroom at Wallingham Road had been, a sort of softened version of it. Alex imagined Joe and Bob carefully removing the posters from Amy's walls at home, rolling them up and carrying them like newborns into the hospital. They would have unfurled them, maybe quarreled over where best to put them for when she wakes up, or perhaps they moved silently, tacking the posters up to the one solid wall, working without words. Thinking about her playlist, she noted the band names from the posters in her moleskin. Pulp and Blur, she already knew, but there were several t-shirts folded on a chair with pictures on the front. Alex walked over to them, looking over her shoulder to be sure she wasn't being watched. They looked worn and faded, the kind of aging that makes them soft. Alex touched the first t-shirt gently, and eventually picked it up and held it from the shoulders so it unfurled. It had pictures of Iggy Pop on it, in a pastiche of Warhol's Marilyn diptych. Alex folded it carefully and put it to one side. The next t-shirt was a blue Blur t-shirt, possibly the one Amy had been wearing on Alex's first visit to the ward. Without picking up the last, Alex could see the familiar typeface of the Smashing Pumpkins. She folded them all back up and placed them down neatly. From everything Bob had said, she imagined Joe would have taken great care over folding clothes, laundering for her little family. Chaos and crisis. Those were the breeding grounds for bad things to go on unnoticed. Not enough eyes watching. Visitors who should not have been made welcome, slipping in through cracks. Nothing about Joe and Bob's life smacked of chaos or distraction. The tiny little house, the regular jobs, the one child. What could they have missed? How could they have missed anything? But they missed Paul. And maybe, if Paul was to be believed, they missed an older guy too. Alex thought of her own mother. She had slept through whole days, leaving Alex to run hungry for the school bus in the previous day's crumpled clothes. So many times she wasn't there, and nothing dramatic had happened. All those dark corners, and very little happened. So why Amy? Alex looked at the posters, and the silence of the ward boomed. She took her iPhone out of her bag, pulled out her earphones, and tucked one bud into Amy's ear, the other into her own. She leaned in, cocking her head towards Amy, scrolling until she found the right playlist. She put the volume way down so it was barely audible, and allowed blur to seep into their ears. Amy's lips ever so slightly parted, and a long exhalation seeped out. Tonight, Alex would add the others. Iggy, yet more blur, Smashing Pumpkins. When Alex had listened to the mix on the way down to Devon, she'd allowed herself to mull over her own cultural experiences of that time. Her 1995. She thought about using that imagery to inspire some personal connection, to help open up the article. Until it dawned on her that one of the biggest challenges with this piece wasn't finding her way in, it was unpicking herself from the story altogether. In her best work, she'd always been the story. As her mother had lain concave as a chicken carcass, whiskey sour untouched on the hospice nightstand, Alex had scrawled her thoughts and observations into a notepad on her lap. As her mother took her last ragged breath, Alex had noted her feelings. The accuracy of the term death rattle, her sole situation in a room occupied by two just moments before. She had watched her mother's face wilt as the sun came up. She'd sent her 500-word column to her editor in a series of long text messages as the day broke, gulping warm bourbon from the rubber hot water bottle usually tucked in her mother's nook. The morning after her mother died, Alex had returned to Matt's arms, but didn't cry for 4 days straight. She didn't cry until she read her column that Sunday, and finally knew how she was supposed to feel. Her compassionate leave was dead time. She'd spent it sculpting the house into their home. As she prepared to go back to work, she had her own surprise hospital stay. And then Matt left. She'd returned to her Tuesday column, working on it from home in wine-splattered pajamas. She stared at the blank page for 3 nights in a row, head swimming with painkillers and wine. Whiskey was too strong for pills like those. The white space had danced around as she'd tried to catch a line. Finally, 12 hours after her deadline had passed, she wrote, "Question. What have my mum, my baby, and my husband got in common? Answer. I've lost them all." It's not a great punchline, but it's the only one I've got. 470 words later, she emailed the column in, crawled halfway up the stairs, and passed out. Her phone woke her up 3 hours later. "Firstly," the voice had said, "I'm sorry for your loss." Then he'd asked, though she'd barely known who he was, "Can you come in this morning? We need to talk." 2 hours later, hair still wet from a cold shower, Alex held her head still in the conference room and tried to work out what face she should be trying to pull as they talked. "We need new ground," said one of the execs she barely recognized from the other side of the walnut table. "This miserabilist stuff has served us well, but it's getting old hat. People become blind to it after a while, you know?" "I see," Alex had managed to say, focusing on the basket of fruit at the center of the table to keep her eyes straight. "What other ideas do you have?" they'd asked. "This is all I've got right now," she'd burped, and coughed the words away. "Alex, perhaps take a bit longer. You've had a terrible..."